Good afternoon and welcome to the continuation of today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks, which is going until 2 o'clock today. Parents and guardians are informed that the Graydon Seely Secondary School at Paddock Road, the Garrison St. Michael, was closed early today. This is because of a water outage in the area. Management of the school regrets any inconvenience caused. Those of you who were listening to the program earlier would have heard somebody from the Barbados Water Authority say that there was a power outage at the Bell pumping station, and they expected that quite a number of people would have been affected, some 25 to 30,000 people overall, and they were going on standby generator, but it was quite likely that areas touched by the Bell would be affected by this power situation that they have had there. Somebody is following up here on this question of bus fare for tertiary education. The writer says that the answer is a simple one. They believe that there's been an oversight, because when you go from age 17 to 18 as a student, fares ought to remain free. They don't know why it is that on the one hand, you could ride free up to the age of 17, and 364 days in the next day, on your 18th birthday, you're required to pay $3.50 per trip. You are still the same student you were yesterday. They believe that students should get the valid ID, a national ID, and should be able to continue to ride free on the buses at the Barbados Community College, because it's really expensive. But yes, while I agree with that, I also think that other measures have to be looked at. I spoke earlier about the internet. Somebody else says that there should be kind of a kind of annex to the community college stationed in St. Peter, so that people on that side of the island don't have to come so far to get to the BCC. These are all things that we need to consider to keep the cost down and to reduce time. We waste so much time in this country doing so many different things. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program. You're on the air.
Hi, Mr. Lewis. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
I'm well. Actually, I was fortunate to hear you say that the Annex of Community College is placed in St. Peter.
Yeah.
To the best of my knowledge, the Annex of Community College has always been said that it will be placed in next season, Lucy.
It doesn't have to be there. You're no longer, we were MP for St. Lucy, and you can no longer demand an airport, nor an annex.
I agree. I can't demand anything, but I have all right to explain to you and correct you where the annex was supposed to be.
Where it was supposed to be doesn't mean that I have to agree with that.
No, I didn't say that you have to agree. But I'm just saying to you that you cannot just change everything that you think is good. And everything that's bad.
Well, I don't believe that it was good. Who said I believe it was good?
By then, you talk anything about the district hospital. Anyhow, that's not why I called you about those things.
What do you call me about?
I call you about the good point you made about the uses of the internet. Mm-hmm. And I also called to correct you all because I heard on the call-in program sometime back that that program was launched by somebody else. That program was actually launched by your humble servant. This Mr. Booz at the Lloyd Erskine Center when I was Minister of Industry. And not only launched, but I ensured that I carried out my commitment because I opened my internet not only at the constituency office, but elsewhere. And this can be proven not only by people in Barbados, but people.
So why is that important?
No. I can't support you on a good point.
Why is that important?
But I ask you, I cannot support you on a good point.
What was the good point?
About the opening of the internet. I just demonstrated to you that it is not by...
But I realize that you had an ulterior motive for supporting me.
You mean I can't support you or anything?
No, not once you got an ulterior motive.
Even if you get credit elsewhere?
No, you want to get some brownie points.
I want to get some.
You're running them on.
No. You want to hear something?
You're running again, right? You're running again?
No, listen, I have said to you over and over. When I was minister, I said to you that when I call this program, I call to make my point. Not for you to improve your credit rating. Not credit rating, your VOB rating.
Okay. But seriously, how you can divorce one from the next?
Because I know you, David. A lot of these things that you.
I know that when a man comes, I know when a politician comes and says he's going to take credit for something, and there are two things you're taking credit for today. It means that man. It means that man is planning to run again.
You see, unlike the others, I keep telling you, you can treat the blue Peter Sharks like this, but you can't treat me like this. And you are not going to get anything out of
it. I bet you. Mark this one down in your calendar. He is getting ready to run again.
You can talk real like. Anyhow, let us talk about the bus fares now. You ready?
I'm always ready.
Because you know you like fishing with an empty hook, and for some reason you always hook a fish. But you won't hook this one, because this is not a blue Peter shark talking to you. Anyhow, the bus fare thing, right? It's a very simple matter. And it's something I have suggested to the transport board on many occasions. There's no need for traveling to charge the constituents of St. Lucie or anybody when they have to move from one point to another to get to the main point. If you go back to 1975, when Mr. Barrow introduced the 25-cent bus fare, that 25-cent bus fare, once you pay it, allow you to travel to your final destination. And I think that that is what should be happening, that Spike Town should be the hub coming from town and also going to town. And there is no need for the transport board to be running buses from Bridgetown to the north of the island or any other way. Mark any destination. All buses coming from Bridgetown should mark Spike Town. I've heard on too many occasions that people at bus stops and cannot get in the bus even though it's the last bus because it says it's going to XYZ. If you put all buses to Spike Town, don't care if any person is in that route can get on and get to Spike Town, and then Spike Town will have to be the transfer point. I don't know if you consider it to be a common sense opinion or not, but I think that that is what will work. And by the way, though, my first speech in Parliament, I'm going to send it to you on the sugar industry. Okay? I do you that favor.
Listen, I thought I had really passed all of this after the 28th. After the elections of 2018. I never really thought that I would have had to go through this again.
I really thought you were finished too until I heard you today and heard you last Sunday. But I thought you were a quite clever moderator, you know. Listen to this one, sir. You said, right, that what Mr. Stewart said last Sunday was nothing new, which meant that you heard everything he said before.
Yeah.
But you know what?
I heard those things.
But you know what you also implied?
Well.
That you don't understand what you people were saying, that he didn't say anything. Have a nice day, sir.
All right, then. All right. Down to Brass Stars.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi, Vendor Calendar here. And I'm just calling to discuss an issue that I've been interested in for many years. The issue of education and the matter of zoning relating to schools. I really called because I heard the minister talking about changing up the system and abandoning the common entrance exam. But let me start with the most positive presentation. Point you made, the issue of zoning. But if we talk about zoning, though, we still have to look at the transportation system. Because, for example, you may be in St. Joseph or some section out there, and you may the school nearby may not be easily accessible. You may have to catch two buses. So you have to look to see where the buses are running. So the point I make is that this will require a lot of thought. So in principle, I've always been supportive of zoning, but partial zoning, where we are not zoning every single school in Barbados. And because we have to face the reality that in order for there to be zoning that is just, there must be the perception that all schools are equal. And we're not only talking equal because of the perception, we're talking about facilities. The schools must have, because if my child is going to a school, let's say in St. Michael, I must figure that we are not being disadvantaged because the school that my child is going to doesn't have a playing field, doesn't have a lab, doesn't have facilities for us to get into things like handicraft or whatever. So first thing we need to look at to see how these schools compare, and that is going to take some time. I don't know if a study has been made of it, but that's the first thing that has to be done if we are going to have a fair system of zoning. I've talked already about the transportation system. So I don't know if it's going to be done that easily. Another thing is that we have the perception that Harrison College and Queens College are top schools because of their obtaining a number of Barbados scholarships. Over the years, I mean, Lodge was once in that, it was once in that system years ago where they were getting Barbados scholarships. Common Mayor was also there getting Barbados scholarships. But now they've fallen by the wayside. And we only have Harrison College and Queens College. And I remember we had done a paper for the Ministry of Education, and the point was being made that Harrison College and Queens College, at that time we had also included Common Mayor, and I think it was another one, four schools, which could be, I think it was St. Michael, which could be treated as special schools in whatever context you want to put it. But in essence, take them out of the pool so that the perceptual difficulty that some Barbadians have would not impede the process. Then we do have a problem in one or two cases where schools, because of their image over the years, because of incidents and different things like that, it might be difficult to put them in the pool as well. So therefore, we may have to make special use of them in some way. So the idea of fairness has to come into it, and I would like to hear a discussion on that later on. But I'm a bit wary of the total abandonment of the Common Entrance exam. We said it might happen by next year. But I think this is something that should be a work in process, and it should take time to be done so that people get a sense of fairness. I had another point
here. Fairness where? What fairness there is in the education system of Barbados?
What fairness there is?
Yeah. But sorry, I don't want to talk to you too much because, you know, whenever I ask you a question, you get real angry. So
I really want to sit down here and just listen to you.
David, so my apologies.
David, that is not true. Don't put that out there.
I didn't want to provoke you, sir.
You don't provoke me. David, stop with that now.
Okay.
Nobody would believe that I came to your house and worked with you on radio projects. Remember that, David? So we've always had a good relationship. You give me the problem that we antagonistic.
In this forum, I find that all too often it degenerates to that level. So that I didn't really want to get involved in a.
I'm coming with some point that I'm making based on my experience.
I don't know, but I'm questioning this. I want to hear where this fairness exists right now. In this education system that you're talking about, where the fairness is.
David, did I say that the system now was totally fair?
No, it wasn't totally.
You hear that?
You accept that it ain't totally fair, okay?
No, there's
will there ever be fairness in the system?
Fairness in every system.
Can you ever? Right. So if you accept that, wherever you go from here, you will have to accept some level of unfairness.
But you don't want to make it worse than it is now. That's the point I'm making.
How are you going to avoid that?
You don't want to give a whole section of people the feeling that we are not being allowed access to certain schools, or that somebody can put in their hand. Not that they don't put in their hand now, and therefore benefit.
But I don't really believe that that's a fundamental issue that we face. Whatever we
what
do...
What's the fundamental issue that we face, David?
The fundamental issue is not which school you go to. The fundamental issue is what you emerge with, what opportunities you are able to achieve as a consequence of what you have been exposed to, whether that is your level of a certification or the experience that you have had in school. You know what our crisis is right now. We know it well. We are feeling it almost every day. When we look at our newspapers, we see it. So whatever changes they make, those changes must, in my judgment, address those people in particular. The elitism, let me make the point that the elitism of the system is working against the country, not the people who we think you shouldn't spend any money on. It is, at the end of the day, the people who are the successes have to leave Barbados to work and to feel that they are somebody, and the rest who live here are feeling more and more like prisoners in their own homes because you have too many people who feel left out of the system.
I don't know what happened. David, you're speaking to somebody. I have taught at a private secondary school. On leaving school, I went to Harrison College, I went to the foundation for a year. I know how the system works, right? I've been president of the National Council for 3 years. I was on the Guild of Graduate. I know how the system works. I've seen all the papers on them. But I'm making the point. Let me get back to the central point I'm making. The idea that you're talking about people being disadvantaged. As I said, I taught at a private secondary school. And it has a lot sometimes to do with the teaching styles that I use, teaching methods, how children are made to feel. Because the school that I taught at has produced a number of outstanding people. Not only we're not just talking about being lawyers and doctors and all that, you know. We talk people who have their own business. Many times I see them. And they come up to me and say, Mr. Gallo, no. I have my own plumbing business. I'm in the construction. I have my own business. At least they were taught to pursue whatever goals they had. But they learned basic things like their English and their math. And they were taught that we were free in terms of getting people involved in sports, like athletics and tennis, those kinds of things, so that they had a sense of achievement. So I'm saying sometimes it may not be the school, it may be how the school itself is run. How children are made to feel, but I don't sense that. I don't think the things are as bad as people trying to say that they're not. So because you went to school at Parkinson has produced a lot of great people in Barbados. The Garrison, for example, so I don't know what we're talking about. And then to say that only Harrison College and Queen's College, because they get the Barbados scholarships, the other people should feel that they are less than Harrison College or Queen's College people, I don't think so.
All right, let's move on.
I don't think so at all.
Thank you very much. This is Down to Brass Tacks. I know that for all the talk about change, there's a body of opinion in this country that I don't care whatever system you introduce, they're going to try their best to keep the elitist system in place under a different guise. I understand the dynamics of that. That's not peculiar to Barbados as a society. There are many people who have this belief that it has to remain like that. But I think there needs to be a candid examination of what the school system is producing. And we need to focus a lot on those people who feel marginalized. Look, when a guy decides that he is going to go into the street and become a member of a gang because he has had no certification or limited certification, he is not respected by those who respect academics or academic success. So he must get his respect another way. And that other way is with a gun in hand or being a leader of a gang or something like that. And we've got to work at a system that reduces the number of people that we are producing like that. This system is proving to us that it has been successful in some areas, but it has been a failure in others. And you're striving for something now that can accommodate both. We don't have to dismiss the guy who is an academic achiever. That person is necessary and needed in a society. But we have to examine is how many of them going to live in Canada? A lot, you know. Not the United States anymore. Not Britain. Canada. As soon as somebody hits 16 years of age, the parents try to get them to Canada. All right? Because they're seen as having greater opportunity there than here. The number of people who go away and study here
can't find a job, you know, can find little to do, don't have the wherewithal to start anything. Most of all, don't have the confidence to start anything. But school should, more than anything else, give you a sense of confidence and the capacity to do. Our system ain't doing that, producing too many people who, when you say to them, there are opportunities, they won't know where they are. They can't see them. Down to brass tacks. You on the air?
Mr. Ellis, good afternoon to you, sir.
How are you?
I am trying to be good.
I want you to know that Harvey Weinstein has been found guilty of 2 counts in his sexual assault trial. He's been convicted on lesser charges of third-degree rape and a criminal sexual act in the first degree, but he's been acquitted of the most serious charge against him, which was predatory sexual assault and first-degree rape. He still faces charges in Los Angeles of rape and sexual assault of 2 women in 2013. So that's been a highly publicized case. It has a lot of links with the so-called Me Too movement. And I know that quite a number of people were waiting to hear what was going to be the verdict in that case. Down to brass tacks. Yes, sir.
Well, Mr. Ellis, it's a good thing that you touched on something like that, because it takes us back to a famous comment by the now famous President of the United States of America, Mr. Trump, in his relation to his endeavors with women. But Mr. Ellis, the next time that you have Mr. Kilman on the program, I would like to ask you the favor of posing some questions to Mr. Kilman, because we're hearing that an agreement has been met between Barbados and TNT in relation to drilling for oil offshore. As you know, Mr. Kilman had responsibilities for such endeavors whilst he was minister in Parliament. And during his tenure, I think the record shows that he got nothing at all done. Another question, again, with Mr. Kilman, as far as asking for a second airport in the north. Now he is focusing on education and other models. But we need to hear more from Mr. Kilman in terms of the direction that Barbados has seemingly gone in by way of gun violence. And we know that his parish is dear to his heart. And there are some suggestions, or should I say, Mr. Ellis, you would know it, is out there for the police to state this, that a lot of the gun crime, like Mrs. Kilman, to come and speak to someone.
It has in the past.
What is he doing in his... It's not the past, Mr. Kilman.
No.
Because I have it on... My Mr. Kilman...
No, sir. I want to say to you that in the not-too-distant past, it has been more so. I think we have seen also in recent times more of a shift to St. Philip. And, you know, but I agree with you that there was a time, especially Crab Hill, people were... who live in the area and people who pass through that area were very, very concerned. It's to me, it seems as though there has been a reduction in the amount of fear associated with it in recent months. But, you know, this question of crime, boy, it's easy to say don't politicize it, but politicians will never be able to avoid using crime as a yardstick for success or failure, because it plays with the emotions of people. And if you can establish that one person has been a success and the other person or party has been a failure, then, you know, it contributes to political success or political failure. But, you know, it's much deeper than that. We were looking this weekend, sir, at this situation here with this tourists were shot, and I've seen the video which has been circulated about this home invasion, as it has been called. I mean, given what has been happening in Barbados in recent times, I don't think that anybody is surprised at this. And, you know, this is striking at the goose that lays the golden egg. You know, well, when somebody can be that daring to move it now from attacking locals to attacking tourists, it is essentially economic sabotage. I don't know how you see it.
Mr. Ellis, this is clearly a stab on the island's educational system. It is clearly a stamp on the leadership. And when I say leadership, I'm talking about the social leadership in the island. This is clearly a stamp on the church and the fact that the church has no role whatsoever, because it is clear that a lot of people have lost their compass, so to speak. And the days of persons going to church on Sundays, Saturdays, whatever the case may be, and just standing in a physical building and expecting persons to come to them, they have long passed. In much the same way, when I guess we come a few months down, you will hear the authors and others come in and comment that we're not seeing the crowds come out to the Calypso tents as in years past. The demographics have changed, David, and people don't understand this.
Mm-hmm.
And until we realize and recognize that you have to be out in the streets and where the guys are gambling, where they're smoking, you have to go to them and pull them in. A man or a woman don't go to Dr. David in Barbados unless they're sick. And they'll tell you that. There's no reason to go to a physician to get a checkup unless they're forced to. And much the same way, we have to see the problem as such. The persons who are leaders in this society, the persons who are successful, they're not the ones with the problems. We have to find a different way to reach the people who need to be reached.
How would you suggest that?
It is only going to get worse. We need a lot more leaders to come and tell their success stories. Don't go on the television. Don't go in the newspapers. But go into your communities. Not the Crystal Heights and other places like that. Get back in the Orleans. Get back in Nelson Street. Get back in the Bayland. Walk through Deatons. We need more people to walk and do the canvassing that the Mark Williamses and those guys do and speak to the younger guys.
You know, the Prime Minister spoke about this last week. I think I'd raised this matter on the program twice before, that there are people who see the crime situation as something that you treat as if it were a health issue, that you don't look at it as a criminal issue. You see it as a health issue and treat it that way. And the intervention is completely different. Now, I heard the Prime Minister allude to that when she spoke last week. And it is worth giving a try because, you know, several other countries are now looking at crime that way. You know, we have for too long just looked at it from the point of view of punishment, but there is scope for us to re-examine the method, the approach that we have adopted to this. In addition to that, though, there is also this question of being able to grapple with behavior, our own behavior and the behavior of other people. And that's not easy, you know. We look for easy fixes to these problems. All right, now, where I stand on it is that I think that you have to have a mix of approaches to every situation. So there is a situation where I still believe in the use of the death penalty. I know there are some people who don't. I believe that there's scope for that. In the domestic situation, I do believe that in extreme situations, you may need to use corporal punishment, but you have to be clear in your mind why you have had to use that. That is last resort. Before you get there, there are several other approaches that need to be adopted with a view to trying to effect change in behavior. So, I mean, I just feel we can turn it around. I'm not ruling out the extreme in certain circumstances, but I don't see the extreme as being something that you put high on the agenda. It's a last resort. Far too many people put the extreme first and second. And I don't think that's taking us anywhere. So there's got to be this new approach. And I know a lot of you say, well, I was raised this particular way, and because I was raised that way. But you know what? That was in the era when
if your child, if you as a child, had done something wrong in the neighborhood, even your neighbor could flog you. That can't happen no more. Even the teacher can't hit people these days. All right? That was the irrelevant. If somebody said to you, listen, boy, behave yourself, you put your tail between your legs and you go home. No, children curse you. they cuss you in the worst way. It's a different world. Everybody has learned that the system, all these boundaries that used to exist within the society and the system were essentially artificial boundaries. And that if you want to lick them down and go through them, you can do that. And there are no consequences, really, because there's nobody there to police you anymore. There are too many people doing wrong to find policemen for all of them. That's really the
thing. It's interesting you said that, David, because a lot of it begins in the school area also.
A lot
of teachers have given up.
With the parents, there are parents who have given up, sir. There are parents who have given up. You know how many men said, not me and he? I never hear, though.
and that's something we clearly need to address. I mean, it's a shame that people don't listen to what Miss Sandy Field Kilman has been telling us for so long. There have been so many other commentators on this. But these are things that we need to address urgently, unless we can talk from now to 2030, David. The violence is going to be worse. We're going to get a lot more murders, and it's not going to go away. And for people who believe that strong-arm tactics coming from on the hands of the police or the attorney general talking big and bold, that's not going to work. We have long past that, and patients need to come to the stark reality. There's a generation of young people out there who they have nothing. They came with nothing, and their simple belief is if they do not have, they will get it at all costs, and they care not whether they lose their lives in the process. That is the greatest challenge we face.
This woman says here, it looks like a woman who sent it to me. She said this morning on the road from the Mencia Cox roundabout to the Globe roundabout, she saw this woman around 9:25 with a beer in her right hand in the presence of two primary school children, nicely dressed in school uniform. And she says the woman was cursing so badly in front of the children. So who should we blame? But there's a lot of doubt there. I mean, you'd be amazed to see how much of that obtains out there in the community right now. And, you know, I told you already, the solution or the attempted solution to that, nobody talks about. But there are a lot of people out there who are angry. That's what people tell me on the streets. You know, they see so much anger. Part of it may well be the economic situation as well, when people don't have money. But sometimes it isn't just about the money. It is just the society generally. I mean, we are feeding off of a lot of violence and stuff. You go and try to watch a movie somewhere. You know, I told you already that I only watch old movies. I watched a new movie recently. I watched Who Killed Malcolm X? A couple of other things I watched, but I watched Who Killed Malcolm X and the Two Popes. Found that really interesting. But what I liked about Who Killed Malcolm X was that it brought back to life at a time when we really need it. Who was Malcolm X? What he stood for? What he said? And then you can determine for yourself how much the world has changed between then and now, for better or for worse, because we've lost a lot of the people who used to talk like that, who used to pinpoint the wrongs of these societies, all right? Who are our heroes today? Our heroes are basketballers and people who are singing music, all right? Many of whom do not carry that kind of message. You know, my observation again, you tell me whether you agree or disagree. We have so put money on a pedestal that the person who is most important today is he or she who has been able to amass a fortune. The guy who stood for something and does not end up with anything is a fool.